My name is Yaliwe Clark. I've been teaching at the African Gender Institute since 2008. And as of 2009, I've been convening a second year course on gender development. And the course is linked to the African Gender Institute. It's part and parcel of one of the core courses that makes up a major in gender studies here at UCT. So my experience of teaching this course is largely informed by my role as a lecturer at the AGI. What I've been teaching has been framed by the kind of literature that the African Gender Institute has been pulling together for many years. I think this gender development has been taught for over 5 years, if I'm not mistaken. So when I came into AGI, the African Gender Institute, in 2008, I had the opportunity to co-teach this course on gender development with Elaine Salo, who had included the kinds of things that are included in a course on gender development are quite typical to what's taught across the continent. So I picked up on topics such as development discourse that originated from women's activism in the 1970s, in which international conferences such as the Forward-Looking Strategies Conference on Women and Gender Equality in 1975 in Nairobi. And that is when a lot of African feminists and women's rights activists began to engage with international discourse on gender development internationally and began to critique a kind of Western approach to Africa's inequality. And it was rooted a lot in developmental discourse. And what I mean by developmental discourse, the discourse of basic human rights and how women are not able to enjoy basic rights in comparison to men globally. And I think a continental focus became very explicit in the 70s. So the courses that I've been involved in teaching at the African Gender Institute, one of the first things that we make very clear is three approaches to taking gender seriously when we look at development. So the first approach is the women in development approach, which has its international history in UN conferences, so Beijing Platform for Action, Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination, had set the international tone for a rights-based approach to development. So what I have been doing in putting together the course outline for a second-year course on gender and development has been to ground a women in development approach in an African context. So each year I pick sometimes the same context, since the course is being taught here in South Africa. Often I would pick South Africa or Lesotho, which is a nearby accessible context, with a lot of research. Both South Africa and Lesotho, there is a lot of gender analysis done on these two countries' development. So I would include, for example, readings on women in development. And one very strong common reading is work by Diane Elson. And she's an economist, and what she does is make links between mainstream economic analysis and its biases, as being biased towards understanding and unpacking male issues or male interpretations of the economy. And she makes very clear in her readings how, if we do not deconstruct male bias in mainstream economic analysis of development, then we're likely, inevitably, to be reinforcing patriarchal practices, and also we're likely to end up in economies that discriminate against women. So women are likely to have less access to economic benefits, and that is typically what would be called a women in development analysis. that can be considered also a very typical liberal feminist analysis of development. So I have began the course by introducing women in development approach to taking gender seriously, relying on Diane Elson. The other literature that I use is the kind of gender analysis that has been put together by international development organizations such as the UN and also the Canadian International Development Agency, CEDA. They have put together a combination of gender analysis tools that have been developed also by Oxfam, including Oxfam and the UN. And theoretically, I place those kinds of tools within a kind of women in development approach, because they work within mainstream economic analysis mainly. They do also go into social political context, but they mainly work within a kind of unpacking, you know, providing gender disaggregated information on access to economic benefits such as housing, such as jobs, such as, you know, the kinds of socio-economic benefits that a state ought to be providing. So I introduced the course with this mainstream kind of approach to gender analysis that's very typical in development discourse. I then move into a discussion on women and development. And this is one approach that's kind of developed historically in contestation with the women in development approach. And I bring in authors such as Pala Achola, who wrote an article in 2005, Definitions of Women and Development. One of the core arguments of women, the women and development approach, is the limitations of capitalist neoliberal framing of development, that we can necessarily rely on supply and demand, capital accumulation, boosting of African economies through foreign direct investment as a source of development, and critiquing the idea that all we need is to have equal access to markets, equal access, men and women have equal access to markets, equal access to the formal economy, equal access to jobs, and that this approach, a women and development approach, would argue that that approach is extremely limited because it doesn't take into account Africa's colonial history. It doesn't take into account the way in which African women have been marginalized through the very kind of neoliberal economic development that the women in development approach purports is the solution. So authors like Pala would point out that it's important to take into account realities of African women and look at the knowledges that African women have, regardless of whether they are integrated or not into formal economies. So let's start with African women's lived realities, and let's be critical of capitalist approaches to development that in and of themselves are actually patriarchal. So no amount of ensuring that women are included in, have access to jobs, are included in the formal economy, are included in the state's approach to development, is necessarily going to shift inequalities that actually are embedded in exploitative historical ties that African economies have with particularly the West, but the rest of the world. Currently we can talk about we can critique the global economy as being explicitly inherently exploitative of women. And in African context, this plays out in the way in which women are always on the margins of the formal economy. You know, so if you look at job creation, statistics will show you in South Africa that the one who is most unemployed is the black African woman. So I would then ground this kind of theoretical approach to taking gender seriously in a South African context. And I often use the clothing industry as a very good example. So the clothing industry in the Western Cape here in South Africa shows us that in fact women, when women are integrated into capitalist economies, they are often always on the margin. And so if you look at the clothing industry, women are often the least paid in the majority. And when there's a shift in the global economy and the cheap labor is found elsewhere in the economy, these industries often die, and almost die out completely in the case of Western Cape, replaced by cheap products from China. And these lowly paid women, often in South Africa, the case is they're often in colored populations, so colored women and black women in the Eastern Cape are suddenly unemployed again. And these are the very women who support large numbers of people in their families, immediate families and extended families. So we demonstrate the impact of relying on a capitalist global economy that is easily swayed by markets that benefit people with capital, who are often people who are not gendered as women. And so the problem being, therefore, the need to understand the inherent patriarchal aspects of capitalist economies. So then I move then on to an introduction on to a third way of taking gender seriously, gender development, which came about in the late 80s, early 90s. Now, in the past, I've used different contexts to demonstrate this approach. I think the first one I ever used was a demonstration of an approach undertaken here in South Africa that attempts to take men and masculinity seriously. So one core aspect of the gender development approach is that we can't deal with gender inequality without actually also deconstructing social political inequalities between men and women. So gender disaggregated data, yes, but let us also unpack the reason why it is that men are benefiting, or men seem to be benefiting, and what are the difficulties of shifting both masculinities and femininities, whereas women in development, women and development have a heavy focus on women's experiences of development or lack of development. A GAD approach would be very interested to have a comparative analysis of women and men's access to economies and expand it beyond a strictly economic analysis to a social political analysis. So let's unpack family structures, let's unpack other social political processes that frame why it is that people gendered as women seem to be having less opportunities. So I have used authors in South African authors and a project called Sonke Gender Justice to demonstrate how a GAD approach enables one to take into account men and women's realities. I have also taken, during the time when South Africa hosted the FIFA football, international football competition, I used authors such as, in fact, I worked closely with a former AGI student who brought authors such as Martha Saavedra, her 2009 article, where she titled Dilemmas and Opportunities in Gender and Sport in Development. So that was a great opportunity to take a very contemporary issue, you know, sport and gender dynamics within sport from a development perspective. In 2011, I looked at, again, a focus on men and boys in South Africa. It was a project that was looking at domestic violence, in which there was a women's project that was working very closely with women on how to respond to experiences of domestic violence. And incrementally, the projects found that, you know, they needed to have a dialogue with men in the community. They needed to have a dialogue with what it was that brought men to the point where they had cases in which men would beat up their wife. In fact, in one case, a wife was beaten to death because of something she cooked or did not cook. So those kinds of issues. And what I do is I bring in, there's a very interesting film called A Few Good Men, based on a research done linked to this particular project. So the film gives an angle into men who were drawn into the project, who then began to train boys in the community on addressing negative masculine values in that area in South Africa. So every year what I do is I bring in a project that is seen to take into account both femininities and masculinities. And because women in development and women in development have a heavy focus on women, when I introduce gender development as a third theoretical approach, I often bring in a scenario that engages directly with men and masculinities, because that tends to be missing in most development discourse that takes gender seriously. The fourth issue that I bring in very squarely in a course on gender development is the role of international institutions in framing development discourse. And so I inevitably launch, by the fourth or fifth week, I will launch into an introduction to the World Bank and the IMF as some two very key international institutions that have framed development discourse. And I then begin to, using WIDWAD and GAD, begin to unpack where it is and how it is these institutions have not quite taken on board issues of gender equality yet. So authors such as Caroline Moser, who did a study on the World Bank in the 1990s, and using her own framework, gender analysis framework, unpacks, and she frames her analysis of the World Bank using WIDWAD and GAD. And so that's why I find that a very useful article, even though it's quite dated, to then unpack, you know, how it is the World Bank came on board late. And then even though they use the rhetoric of gender and development, actually their practice is still a women in development practice, still very much limited to the economy, formal economy, and still very much working within the limits of liberal feminist discourse, which is very limited in unpacking what it is the economy, the patriarchal implicit nature of mainstream economics. So they don't go beyond that. Of course, the World Bank, it is a bank, and its framing, its discourse and its practice is in fact capitalist economies. So it's not surprising that the World Bank doesn't offer much beyond women in development approach. In order to ground the work of the World Bank within an African context, I have, in the last 3 years actually, focused on Lesotho, and I focused on the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, which is a project that has been heavily funded by the World Bank. And there have been a couple of studies by UNIFEM, United Nations Fund for Women, which is now UN Women, that demonstrates how, due to the World Bank's lack of understanding of gender analysis and actually political will to do a gender analysis, how the building and the development of the dam has created or deepened inequalities and disadvantage women in the communities that have been directly affected by the project. So that I found to be a very useful way of demonstrating how international institutions can have a very local and real impact on development and the lives of African women. But also, at the same time, I'm able to demonstrate the role of the World Bank in framing government agendas on development and gender equality. And so I often show a film. There's a film that one can access called Nature Be Damned. Often I find that students are not aware of the Lesotho Highlands area, livelihoods in Lesotho before the dam, and how therefore the dam then shifted social, political, and economic livelihoods for men and women in Lesotho. So what that film does is it interviews people before the dam was built and shows their livelihoods, and then also gives insights on how the dam, you know, impacted on areas where the dam had already, the project had already begun. I then move into another international institution, inevitably the United Nations, and track historically when it was the United Nations began to take gender seriously. So looking at some key international conferences the UN has hosted, and a very good reading for that is Jane DeBakey's reading, Development as If Women Mattered, is the title of the article, looking at from 1986 through to 1995. So that article is very succinct in mapping the history of the UN and international women's activism within the UN and how that has shaped UN structures to date. So another set of international institutions that I look at is the African Union. So we cannot talk about development in Africa without looking at the history of the Organization of African Unity and how it evolved into the African Union and when it was that these institutions started taking gender seriously. Some good readings for that kind of topic. You've got two readings that look at current African Union projects. Sarah Longway's article that critiques the NEPAD, a new partnership for Africa's development, and critiques it from a gender perspective. There's also another article by Riamaro Zo, in 2002. She also critiques NEPRAD, looking at gender and poverty. Recently, I've used an article by Whitehead, Ann, and Lockwood in 2000, looking at the way in which the African Union has been influenced by the IMF and World Bank's poverty assessments. So the main point I make about the African Union is that it's taken on a very typical neoliberal capitalist approach to development and has been heavily influenced, particularly from the formation of the UN, by the IMF and World Bank's neoliberal agenda. And therefore, the limitations of the African Union in taking gender seriously are quite similar to the limitations of the World Bank and the IMF. What is important to do, I think, for students is also to map the history of the African Union and see how the Organization for African Unity began with quite a counter-Western approach to development discourse, but a patriarchal one, and then moved into acknowledging gender equality as an important agenda within that, and then taking on a neoliberal approach that then shapes a kind of conservative approach to gender equality. It's also important at this time, in 2011, to include information about the African Union's Protocol on the Rights of Women that was passed in 2003, that provides a very interesting kind of legal progressive framework for taking gender seriously, even though in terms of economic implementation of gender equality, the African Union is quite conservative. So I always try to, in the course, to ground the students in issues, international organizations located here on the continent, how they are framed by and how they link into organizations like the IMF and the World Bank, especially when it comes to the new partnership on Africa's development, NEPAD. I tend to end the course with a couple of themes, themes that I think are contemporary to development issues in Africa. Two of them have run for 2 years running, gender, media, and development, and HIV/AIDS. For HIV/AIDS, I've taken on two slants. Initially, I looked at the discourse of prevention from infection and treatment of HIV/AIDS and how that is a gender discourse, and looking at UN statistics on that still continue to show that the people who are infected and affected the most are women between the ages of 24 and I think it's 35, in particularly with regard to infection. And why is that the case? What are the norms and what are the practices around sexuality amongst men and women, boys and girls, that make that statistic the way it is? And the other slant I've taken is looking at care work and how, when it comes to people affected by HIV/AIDS and infected by HIV/AIDS, the bulk of the load for taking care of patients falls on people gendered as women. And people gendered as women who are not supported by the health system in the government. So I found that this particular theme is not only very relevant to our context, but there's a lot of literature on it. There's a lot that we can access. And so for the first time I included a theme on HIV/AIDS, I had only 1 week, 3 lectures and 2 tutorials. But now I've extended it to 2 weeks, a 2 week theme focusing on care, introducing statistics, gender desegregated statistics on infection, and moving into gender desegregated statistics on care work, and unpacking through the South African context what are the health policies that limit a government's willingness and ability to actually relieve the burden of care work from people gendered as women in the South African context, which is common to many African contexts, because healthcare systems are still catching up with what it takes to prevent and to treat and to care for people who are affected or infected by HIV/AIDS. The other topic, gender and media, proved very popular because we know that there's a strong link between the development industry in the last couple of decades and the use of information technology to create awareness on rights, you know, on health issues, on education, on all sorts of things. So it was I think, useful to make the links between media and development, and then the gender stereotypes embedded in the way in which media development discourse or development practice uses information technology. And for this one, because at the time that I began to teach this course, we had Selina Mudavanu, who had a speciality in media and development and gender. So we brought in her skills, and she was able to draw on her own context in Zimbabwe and look at how from colonial periods in Zimbabwe, colonial government used the media to push Zimbabweans to change their agricultural approaches. And what we unpacked in class was the way in which gender stereotypes were embedded in the use of film. So we drew on authors such as Vambe Chikonzo, the portrayal of Africans in agricultural films in southern Rhodesia. And we also drew on Jeeves A, the cinema and health propaganda in South Africa, and Sanga and Hadland, challenging patriarchal scripts, a gender analysis of South Africa's community print media. So balancing two contexts, Zimbabwe and South Africa, demonstrating how media had been used to push certain developmental agendas and the stereotypical gendered images that tended to entrench quite patriarchal interpretations of who, you know, ought to be taking on what roles for society to develop. So that was an interesting new theme that we experimented with when I came on board with when I began to convene gender development courses here at the African Gender Institute. One new theme we brought in was a focus on the Millennium Development Goals. So in unpacking the role of the United Nations in gender equality globally and continentally, we focused on South Africa's attempt to implement Millennium Development Goal number 3 that focuses on gender development. And with the input and expertise of Dr. Helen Scanlon that joined us last year, she was able to unpack, you know, what are the implications of this Millennium Development Goal at an international level? What does it mean for South Africa's approach to gender equality, and how has South Africa attempted to unpack it? And she drew on South African government report on Millennium Development Goal 5, gender equality, and she gave very explicit, you know, nice gender disaggregated statistics based on the, you know, the Millennium Development Goals. They give benchmarks, you know, benchmarks. By this year we must have achieved this, by this year we must have achieved that. So that also was a very good way of grounding an international instrument in local African context that attempts to ensure gender equality is implemented. So that's the way in which the course has been framed. Basically, overall, we're talking about an introduction of 3 common approaches for taking gender seriously within development discourse: women in development, women and development, gender and development, an introduction to and an analysis of key international institutions that have shaped development discourse, some of which have shaped the discourse in a way that gender has not been taken on fast enough and deeply enough. So we introduced the IMF and the World Bank, the limitations of their developmental agenda, which is capitalist and neoliberal. We look at the United Nations being a very strong force in putting on the agenda gender equality from the 1970s, and how that has evolved to the 1990s, to the 2000s. African Union, the role of the African Union in shaping development discourse that takes gender seriously, and current attempts to implement gender equality through the new Partnership for Africa's Development. And then we look at specific 2 extra themes that are contemporary. I think that there are certain limitations with this kind of approach of, in teaching the course, because inevitably development discourse is heavily reliant on a liberal feminist analysis. And when I say a liberal feminist analysis, it's heavily reliant on working within state systems as they currently function. And current state systems function within economic analysis. They function within a legalistic rights approach to gender equality. And they also function within a very heteronormative way of thinking about gender. So in order to do so, development discourse, gender analysis, it's always about unpacking benefits of development, access to development, women versus men. It doesn't do very well in unpacking what could be problematic about that simplistic binary formation of gender identities and basing analysis on that kind of binary. It also doesn't unpack the limitations of a liberal rights discourse, you know, right to food, right to health, right to housing, and then working within a kind of discourse that doesn't unpack the limitations of legal frameworks. So having experienced for the last 3 years running this course, what the African Gender Institute is looking to do in the next phase of our major is to re-look at the course in a way that we are able to integrate more of an historical analysis of the ways in which gender identities have been framed in the African context that does not limit ourselves to only a binary understanding of gender identities. Also to locate Africa's developmental issues not only within, you know, rights discourse, but actually look at colonial histories and look at alternative economies, not only think about capitalist economies as the kind of economy that can be beneficial, but actually Africa has had different economic systems over the years. So it would be very interested in looking at economic histories in West Africa, economic histories in East Africa, build on our focus on Lesotho, but also have more of a historical analysis of Lesotho's economic history and how gendered identities have evolved within that, and a notion of equality and gender equality has happened in different ways, you know, not just the perspective of the UN or the IMF or the ways in which international conferences and international agendas have shaped our understanding of gender equality or inequality. Topics such as climate change, ecofeminism, that's also something that is very closely linked to development, especially contemporary development issues. We cannot talk about development and not talk about the environment. And ecofeminism, I think, offers a very interesting way of unpacking links between gender and environmentalism. So that's another topic I think would be interesting in pursuing. We would want to shift the course away from strictly gender economic analysis into gender and political issues. So we would not want to assume that citizenship, as we understand it now, is adequate. So unpack citizenship and look at women's political participation across a historical period. And of course, the issue of women's representation in political structures as a route to shifting Africa's developmental agenda as an import. So we know that there's been a lot of African women organizing around women's political representation in governments as a route to changing gender inequality. So that's something I think that we can put squarely in a course that takes gender development and political change